Arthur Smith, ladies and gentlemen. The Steelers' offense going into this matchup Sunday against the number one defense in the NFL. And the question posed to Arthur Smith today was from Jeff, and it was about how apparently players in the locker room yesterday were echoing a phrase from Smith on Tuesday during film study. He said, the dam is about to break offensively. And that's when Arthur Smith said, we're getting closer and there's progress being made. I don't think Mike Tomlin wants the dam to break on Sunday. I don't even think they're capable of the dam breaking on Sunday because of who they're playing. So I do not expect an offensive eruption. I do not expect big offensive numbers. I expect low scoring. I expect ugly. I expect first to maybe 14 wins the game. I'm not even going to say 17 for this game on Sunday. So that's how I see it. Malzi, if you disagree, you can do it now or forever hold your peace.
What is this, a wedding?
Charlie, can you turn this man's volume up? We can't hear Malzi. Thank you, Charlie. Charlie's researching Buccaneers all-time stat leaders right now. He wants to see where Warrick Dunn ranks on their career rushing list.
He's on a rare Bucks, Rutgers, Devils trio of stat pack. So he's like researching Ray Rice. He's got Mike Teal on the brain.
He's buying his Leroy Selman creamsicle orange.
He's thinking of Travis Zajac right now.
Yeah.
I think the more interesting thing you said right there is the idea that Mike Tomlin does not want the dam to break.
Fittipaldo is going to join us at 5:15. He said this week in the Post Gazette, Mike Tomlin is still pulling the strings on the offense, and if Arthur Smith had his druthers, they would not be this conservative.
Yeah, I believe that. Mike just can't let go of the idea that he can win with defense. I've said that there's an ego component to this that so many people, which I thought was unfair in the moment when it happened, because it's just true of any great coach that they almost always have a great quarterback. So many people not only just said you rode Ben's coattails, but like actively derided Tomlin in the process. Basically, you're a nobody. You should consider yourself lucky you had Ben your whole career. I can see you nodding like you're thinking maybe this should be my next argument.
Well, that last sentence I think is accurate. He should be lucky.
Okay, but like, do you think he's a complete nobody as a coach?
No, I don't ever rank him at the bottom of the NFL coaches.
I'm just saying a lot of people, I think in this town, the venom got such with him, and he probably was aware of it, where people like actively thought he sucked and was literally propped up as like a guy who was Rich Coe type, basically, propped up by Ben, which I don't ever think was true. So I think Mike has an ego, and Mike is aware of some of those comments, but Mike also just wanted to do it his way. He came in as a young coach for a very veteran team, tried to use the whip, so to speak, on the horse very hard during the regular season. They were all out of gas, learned his lesson. They won a Super Bowl in year two. Never won another one. I think Mike wants to prove that defense is still in vogue, that you can still do it his way, that the recipe for being a big-time winner doesn't have to be put up a ton of points. I think he's wrong about that. I think he should gradually continue to loosen the reins. But as you have said, and I think you said right after Denver, I think you said it before Denver, this probably isn't the week to try to do that with Justin Fields. If Arthur Smith had his druthers, he'd be running a more wide-open offense. I'm not so sure going against the Chargers, who want to have the same kind of rock fight you want to have and are better equipped to win the rock fight with you than the first two teams you played. I know Atlanta won last week, but I think it would be unwise to suddenly try to go opening it up here against a team that's good on defense, can run the ball right at you, and if Justin Herbert plays, has a better quarterback than you.
I don't think it'll work because the Chargers' defense has actually been better than yours, which I've said nothing but incredibly positive things about their defense. And somehow when you look at points allowed, the Chargers have given up even fewer than the Steelers.
It's called the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, the Raiders before that, who went to Baltimore and came back from down 10.
No, I know. I'm just saying they did play the Panthers. There should always be
a
Bryce Young
asterisk. Well,
the
Steelers played the Broncos, so do we have to put an asterisk next to what they did? They got Bo Nix.
Man, that's Sunday. If you Voltron together the best parts of Bo Nix and Bryce Young right now, I don't know if you'd have an NFL quarterback. But yes, I get your point.
I want you to grade the start of the Arthur Smith era through two games from what you've seen, not what you're projecting, not asking for Mulsey to extrapolate here. Just what is your grade on Arthur Smith two games in? as the new play caller?
I'm somewhere in between a B, B minus. But that should represent for people an increase. I gave him a C plus, I think, when he was hired. I said, like, you could have done better. If you were going to go for somebody that, like, had a background, maybe you could have found somebody else.
Somehow become more impressed with him after two games that yielded one touchdown.
I do think that he sequenced plays better. I think he seems to have a better feel. Like, you know what's something that I think is impressive for him? He has still managed to find ways to have George Pickens getting open, either against single or beating double coverage. When we and everybody else that plays the Steelers knows, he's the only guy they have that can threaten you downfield. The fact that Pickens has had a 51-yarder wiped off the board, had a long catch against the Falcons, was wide open for a 3rd-and-11 conversion against the Broncos. And again, I'm grading on the curve of I agree with the idea that Tomlin is kind of neutering them a little bit artificially. He has managed to get their best player open when everybody knows that he is their only option. I have to give him some credit for that.
I don't give him a ton, and I'm not going to make this a negative. I'm not going to go hammer time on Arthur Smith either. I think that that's actually been more about what the other teams thought of their corners and matching up with Pickens. Now, making Pickens more of an emphasis in the offense and saying, hey, if they're going to only go with Sertan or Terrell on him,
make sure
you get him the ball. Yeah, so I think I'll give him credit for that. I don't think that either team, though, like, went out of their way. They thought their corners could take Pickens out of the game, and they were wrong. When you pay a corner $20 million a year, use a top 10 pick on him, I think hubris sets in, like, we don't need to give this guy help. He can match up with the guy, and I think the Steelers, to some extent, exploited that.
He's a hard grade, though. I mean, it's a hard
You couldn't even give me B or B minus. You said in between.
Yeah,
I don't even know what to write down now.
Well, it's a hard grade because you put a weird caveat on it. Do you agree, first, just quickly, yes or no, with Ray Fittipaldo's basic assertion about Tomlin and the offense?
To an extent, I do, but here's
that wasn't a basic yes or no, Malzi.
Okay, you're right. Damn it. Then I'm going to say no because I wanted to explain myself.
Okay, then explain yourself.
The reason why I say no is this. I think that Arthur Smith has a lot of the – he is an offensive coach unlike Tomlin, but I think his offensive personality jives with Tomlin. There was a stat last year that said – this is a stat – running with a lead in the second half. So when you have a lead in the second half, what is your percentage of running plays?
Mm-hmm.
And the Steelers were 1 and the Falcons were 2. So both teams had the mindset of when we get a lead, let's not necessarily put our foot on the throat of the opponent and stay aggressive. Let's run the ball, bleed clock, and try to win the game the old Bill Cowher way.
Mm-hmm.
Arthur Smith did that. So that's why I think, in addition to having great references like Dick LeBeau and Ken Wisenhunt and all the ex-Steelers, Russ Grimm, who went to Tennessee, his personality fits what Tomlin likes and also what I think the owner likes. So is Mike Tomlin forcing Arthur Smith to do this, or is he asking Arthur Smith to do it, and Arthur Smith obliges because he believes in the same things as Tomlin? I think it's that, Chris.
Well, you don't hire a coordinator for Mike Tomlin if Mike Tomlin still wants to play conservaball, who's going to go high-flying air raid. So you were going to automatically and artificially.
He didn't hire Clint Kubiak. He hired Arthur Smith.
Well,
to your
the
point.
owner's the other bigger part of this too, even more so than Tomlin. I still think the owner likes to go along with that idea too because he thinks it's 1977 sometimes, and Tomlin probably wishes he was coaching ball in 1977. I'm going to give Arthur Smith.
Although football has looked a lot more like 1977 lately.
Well, I'm going to give Arthur Smith a little. That's part of the reason I could grade him a little more favorably because a lot of offenses haven't been good and they've turned the ball over.
So are you going up to a B on a one touchdown performance through 2 weeks?
I'm going B minus though. You know what he's done? One thing that's like very basic that I think is good. He has, well, there's two things. One, I just don't think that they look so predictable that you're hearing people, like, laugh and say, we know exactly what the Steelers are going to do because the guy running the show offensively, like, literally doesn't belong in the league. Where Canada, it was a valid critique. You could just tell he kind of just called whatever came into his head. There was absolutely nothing in terms of sequencing. I think Smith understands how to sequence. He's been a good enough offensive coordinator to get head coaching job. He understands that. He's also put play action back into their arsenal. And it hasn't always worked, but it's been like a look people have been craving that I think, in theory, is going to continue to make Justin Fields' life easier. And so just the re-implementation of something that was completely phased out, really because of late Ben not wanting to do it, and then Canada just kind of kept that going, I'm glad that they are starting to do that again. It's just like a very basic thing in football that they inexplicably did not do. Justin Fields, I saw a chart. It was percentage of like time that that teams used play action, basically. The Steelers were near the top of the league, and Fields was like reasonably effective in those on those plays. Like they were net positives. Not by a ton. They weren't as good as you'd want them to be, but they were still solid. And so I do think he is catering to what he has, by and large, with this. And so maybe a B-minus is a reflection of the fact that I just don't think they have a ton of horses to rely on here.
You know, we're like a startup on offense. As a startup company, we really are. You know, we've got a great defense and good teams, and, you know, those are things why we go to work, and we got to keep working. But there's a couple of little things, and I don't want to bore you in too much nuance and context, but things that are clearly we've got to get better at, and we're looking at everything. But going back to that first half, you know, that's kind of who you want to be. You know, we were mixing and matching. We were being aggressive, different than we were in Atlanta. We've got to take that into the third quarter because they're going to make an adjustment, and we've got to be better there.
Arthur Smith channeling his inner Colin Cowherd and comparing the Steelers' offense to a startup company. Once upon a time, his dad's company was a little startup. It was called FedEx. Now it's worth billions. And now Arthur Smith, by extension, is worth billions of dollars.
He's probably one of the like few people who, if he inherited all that money, could actually buy the Steelers. Like, as the principal, he's got more money than the Rooney family does outside of football.
Yeah, why even go outside of football?
Yeah, just period. I mean, the Rooneys, like the Browns in Cincinnati, are one of those families whose entire wealth is tied up in their ownership of the team.
And when you have that much money, you can give yourself a mustache and not feel any of the heat for it.
Oh, yeah, he could do whatever he wants looks-wise, and everyone will
tell him it looks good. The mustache is back.
You've got the full beard. Why don't you go mustache?
Because I can't do it. Like, look at ESPN right now. ESPN2. That guy's rocking a mustache. It looks fake. Mustaches are everywhere.
Who do you think brought the mustache back? Who's most responsible for the mustache being back in vogue? It's not like Tom Selleck walked back into the public consciousness here.
Is it Skeens?
No. Baseball doesn't have enough juice. If Otani had a mustache,
Livy Dunn got juice.
Does she have a mustache?
No, but that's who he's dating. The Livy Dunn effect.
So people...
She's on the gram. She's on the TikTok.
So
that's
women and... women and especially and particularly the horny guy quotient of the world that uses social media.
If it's good enough for Livy Dunn, maybe it'll be good enough for my potential lover.
Do they think Livy Dunn likes Paul Skeens because of his mustache or because...
She tweeted a little kid about it.
Yeah, I think that was more her playing to the whole mustache phenomenon.
That's what I'm referring to right now.
I think she likes Paul Skeens probably because he's a big-time pitcher. There is 6'5", 240.
There is a mustache phenomenon. When we write the final analysis on 2024, part of it will be that a mustache phenomenon took hold.
Who is the greatest athlete in any sport who was known as always having a mustache?
Like, Raleigh Fingers.
See, I knew you were going to say that, but there's got to be somebody who was thought of as a mustache guy in another sport. Like, what was the Lanny McDonald for the Calgary Flames, that big red mustache?
Yeah,
like
he had a
lip was on fire.
Big, thick one.
Yeah. Well, he looked like he was like a pirate, like an Irish pirate.
Yeah.
I might have got you there.
No, you
feel like I might have got you there.
But the mustache has taken off. I mean, look at
Donnie, what would Sarah do?
Donnie doesn't have one, but a lot of people in the Donnie age demo of like the mid to late 20s are all
Michael
going mustache.
Remember Michael Gar used to work at Odyssey Pittsburgh. Ridiculous mustache.
Terrible mustache, but terrible mustaches are in, so he's cool, I guess.
Donnie, what would Sarah do if you she came home or whatever and you had shaved everything but the mustache and now she was the significant other of a mustache-having man?
Break up with me.
Really?
Wow.
Has she warned you, like, hey, don't go mustache?
Yes. Like, never go clean-shaven again fully and never go just mustache.
So wait, presuming that the wedding bells someday ring for the two of you, she would expect and want you to have a beard on your wedding day?
What's wrong with absolutely. That? I mean,
Is she the New York Yankees now, Mulsey? She's got to have a clean-shaven
When I got married, I felt like I should have, you know, be clean-shaven even though I rarely am.
What societal pressure did you have there?
Self-placed pressure.
I mean, some people say the beard is like the makeup for men.
Makeup for men.
I am much, much more appealing with facial hair than I am just naked on the face.
I disagree. Can you post that picture of you with Larry Foote again when you were clean-shaven and you had just gigantic sideburns? I love that Donnie look.
He had, like, the pork chops?
He had some big, thick sideburns. It was a manly look. It was an intimidating look.
Wow. He does need to post
this. He looked
this.
Like a greaser. He looked like a guy that
That's
could
what
roll
I mean.
Up
like,
his
roll,
T-shirts.
And he has a pack of cigarettes rolled up in the sleeve. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He needs to post that. What's the dude in Shawshank who gets shot by the warden?
Frank?
No, the dude who, like, the young guy who comes in, doesn't he have the big sideburns in that movie?
Ralph?
Pony, come on.
You're asking me, I'm throwing
it's
out
the one,
names.
You just, I'm not, no, it's just, you know the character I'm talking about, right?
Sure.
No, you don't.
Here is Joe on Arthur Smith. Hello, Joe. Joe, you there? Goodbye, Joe. Another Joe.
So,
hello, Joe.
So, Arthur Smith, I'm saying, I was going to say C minus, but because the whole standard is the standard, I think he was the safe pick. I would have liked the Steelers to get someone. You got to give Pitt credit for going out to get someone like Cade Bell, some young, you know, innovative coach. I think, you know, I'm going to move it up to a C because I do feel like upper management, ownership pretty much tell him, don't turn the ball over, run the ball, play defense. And this year, just by chance, the Steelers have kind of fallen into an early season where it's kind of working, but with a lot of quarterbacks getting hurt, they're kind of following the script that they want them to, but at some point, you're going to have to face Patrick Mahomes.
Right.
So okay, I'm going to go C.
Okay, I just want to make sure I hear you right, Joe. Joe in Wexford is saying Arthur Smith would do better, but Mike Tomlin is holding him back. Yes?
Yes. Yes.
So this goes back to the head coach problem again. People think they do have an offensive coordinator who's worth a damn. They do think he could be better. They do think he could be more creative. They do think he could be more innovative. They do think he could be more effective. But this traces back to people not believing in the head coach. That's what I'm hearing. Mike Tomlin problem. Not an Arthur Smith problem. This is, see, now this is different than Matt Canada. Matt Canada could be, name another head coach that people like, Andy Reid's offensive coordinator. And if Andy Reid stayed out of it and just said, Matt, you call the plays,
mm-hmm.
Matt Canada would look bad. This is different where people are saying Arthur Smith actually in the right situation would look quite good, but it's Mike Tomlin's fault that they're not being more productive. That is Joe and Wexford's take on it. Do you agree with that?
I think Tomlin still wants to put the clamps a little bit on things. I still think he is sending a message from above, especially against two. Well, one, it looked the Falcons like an overmatched team in week one, and then a definitely overmatched team in week two. Like, hey, just don't screw this up. I think absolutely there's some unconscious pressure being put on. You're like, hey, yeah, you have your whole playbook, but do you really want to run that play that puts the ball a little more at risk, or do you just want to keep on grinding out, you know, third and shorts and hoping it works?
Time for a Bucko Minute. Ballsy, the Pirates last night clinched another non-winning season. Their last winning season was actually not, people get this wrong, it was not the 2015 season. It was actually 2018, the last time it happened. But still, that is a long time ago now in baseball terms. Mm-hmm. And the Brewers clinched the NL Central last night. So how about this? Three teams since baseball went to the six-division format in 1994.
Yep.
So 30 years.
Yep.
Three teams have not won a division title.
I think I can name at least two of them because one is the Pirates.
Yep.
I think the Marlins have never won one.
Correct. Donnie, do you know the other one?
I don't think so. I'm trying to run through my head.
Can I again make an attempt here?
Go ahead, Malzy.
I want to say the Rockies never have.
Malzy, check out the big brain on our friend Christopher Michael Muller.
And I think the reason
there's a new
I know,
sheriff in town.
Yeah, right. I think the reason that I know that is because with the Marlins, it's like an interesting little footnote. They've won two World Series, but they've never won their own division. And with the Rockies, it's that they've been to a World Series, but also, again, never won their own division.
So think about, from that perspective, the argument is there that the Pirates have been, in this modern baseball format, the worst team.
They have been, because those teams have both got... Like, I understand that baseball, and I make this argument all the time, it's about, like, a really great regular season should not be discarded because you didn't win in the playoffs, because it's so different. The sample size of games, it's so random. But still, people in this country, by and large, sports fans say, did you make it to a World Series? Did you win a World Series? Well, the Marlins made it to and won two of them, and the Rockies got Rocktober going with Clint Hurdle and made it to one. Like, I'm sorry. The Pirates, if you want to talk about level of tangible accomplishment, in this 30-year run here, Pony, theirs is lowest. The Royals went to and then won a World Series. Back-to-back years.
And they might end up blowing it here. It's possible with the way the Tigers are playing. But they're probably going to go from 100 losses last year, 106 losses, to...
Well, they've guaranteed a winning season, and they're probably going to win about 88 games. I am a little bit miffed that my Royals to win the AL Central ticket now does not look as fun because they're almost mathematically eliminated from doing that. Even your, I don't want to call them woebegone teams, but even teams like the Seattle Mariners have been to an LCS in this time frame, or teams like the, you know, we laugh at the Angels. How do they constantly have, like, you know, two of the best players in baseball for a long stretch and then still suck? They made it to and won the 2002 World Series. The White Sox, currently the laughingstock of the sport. Current record, 36-117.
Hilarious.
Went on one of the all, and I mean this, and people can go back and fact check this, it's true. I know you know it's true, Pony. One of the all-time dominant postseason runs en route to the 2005 World Series. So you can cherry pick pretty much every team from this era, and the Pirates have had less success overall. Either because the other team has won a division at least one time, hey, you were better than the other teams that you were going against, or they've made it further in the playoffs.
And I don't think the spending thing, and that's what everybody comes back to, and I do it too, but the spending thing is not the only reason why, or far and away the biggest reason why the Pirates aren't winning. And let me tell you why. Teams bottom 10 in payroll, if you had to guess off the top of your head, how many of them right now are projected to make the playoffs?
The current bottom 10 in payroll?
Yeah.
I would say three or four. Probably three. Guardians, Royals, Tiger. Well, no, they're
Orioles.
Not projected to make it. Orioles. Guardians, Royals, Orioles. And then I would probably say bottom 10 in payroll, you said, Pony?
Yep.
I could imagine the Brewers still being bottom 10. How close are they?
Well, hold on a second here. I had to get the updated number. So the Royals are actually not in the bottom 10 in payroll. I thought they were.
The Gardos definitely are.
With their trade deadline moves, they actually moved out of it. So if they were still in the bottom 10, it would have been four, maybe five with the Tigers potentially.
Mm-hmm.
So because they're out, it's Brewers, Orioles, Guardians. So three. And then if the Tigers make it,
it would be
that
four.
Would be four.
And the Tigers are nipping at the Royals' heels.
They're a half game out. So, I mean, still, it's less than 50-50.
But if the Tigers get in, it's 40%. I mean, that ain't bad.
Among the teams with payrolls in the middle, 11-20, projected to make the playoffs, Diamondbacks 1, Padres 2, Twins 3, Royals 4. So, honestly, it's about the same. Middle of the pack compared to being
middle
in the bottom
of the pack. Middle of the pack's ultimately doing better than biggest spenders because the Yankees, the Phillies, the Dodgers are your huge spenders. Is Houston up there?
Yes.
Okay, so the Houston. So you got four there.
Well, actually, Chris, the top six payrolls are all projected to make
okay,
the playoffs.
Okay, you know what? I did some bad counting there. You're
Mets,
right.
Mets, Yankees, Astros, Phillies, Dodgers, Braves. Well, I guess the Braves aren't
Braves
right
are technically
now.
Out, so five.
So five, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the money is still usually the biggest thing, and it's the thing that I wish – because all these other teams, like the Guardians have signed guys to like a $20 million a year deal. They sent what? Didn't Jose Ramirez get like three – you know, he got a much bigger. He got a bigger extension than that.
He got a huge one.
Right, but they even back in the day, they signed – there's a player that the Guardians signed, and I remember thinking, like, this would be so nice because he was a home run hitter. It was a guy who was just going to hit the ball out of the ballpark, and I'm completely blanking on who it was.
Edwin Encarnacion?
Might have been. For like 3 years, $60 million, something like that. And I thought, like, why can't the Pirates do that? The Guardians are doing that. No one shows up to those games. The money matters to me, but and it's always going to be the first thing I think about. But, like, it also just highlights the ineptitude with which I think Ben Cherington has done his job. I mean, the Pirates have, what, still the second lowest payroll in baseball, I believe?
Yeah,
so,
ahead of the A's.
So he is working even at a disadvantage compared to those other teams, because I would love, if you were showing me the gaps, I would guess that those teams are spending between 15 and 25 million more on their ball clubs right now. So he is working at a disadvantage, but my God, the guy got a lottery ticket this year in Paul Skenes and couldn't make more out of it than what looks like at least an 85 loss season.
And you have 5 years to build it up. And as far as homegrown position players who are going to help you make the playoffs, what do you have to show for it?
Home, truly homegrown. So drafted by you, developed by you. Not
or, I mean, if you traded
okay,
for a guy's
so Reynolds.
A prospect.
Okay, so you traded for Reynolds.
But that wasn't
was
his
prospect.
Doing.
Yeah, I know. What? No. Homegrown players.
Nick Gonzalez.
Okay.
Key Brian Hayes.
Mm-hmm.
Who I'm not even going to count him because I don't think you can. What is he?
Yeah.
Joey Bart.
Yeah, they get credit
so two.
For Bart. Yeah.
Two guys.
Yeah, if people don't realize this, O'Neill Cruz was brought in by the previous
I'm
regime.
Not going to put Billy Cook and Nick York in there yet. I mean, far from it. In 5 years, Chris.
He's done virtually no building from within positionally. None. I mean, they have bad player development, and these guys just come up and look lost compared to players for other teams.